How you been, Scott?
I've been good. How you been doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I guess I got to hit you with the obvious question. It's been like 3 years now. Where the hell's your new record?
Oh, yeah.
You've been telling me for 2 years now. You had two records ready to go.
It's slow coming. The hurdles I ran into this time were I just didn't want to do the same thing twice, you know?
Right.
The first CD we did, we just released independently and trucked around with it. And it was fun to do, but the thing that's been holding me up with this CD is just what I'm going to do with it, and been taking a little more time with it.
You're being a little bit coy. What do you mean? What kind of things are you possibly doing with it?
I would just like help this time around.
Yeah?
So instead of just releasing it, you know, out of the trunk of my van kind of thing.
And is this a distinct possibility? Have you talked to some folks about releasing it?
Yeah, I've been talking to some people, and it's a couple options. It's the shopping stage, I guess, as you call it. Yeah. Not a, you know... We're not going to be coming out on Sony or anything tomorrow.
Yeah,
it's nothing that big, you know. Just I just want to work as a part of a team as opposed to working alone all the time.
Right. So, what kind of level are we talking about? Are we talking like a small kind of indie label?
In all likelihood, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I tend to look at. I mean, I have my own reasons for it, but you know, a lot of these small indie label nows are international, you know.
Yeah.
So. They're just where we want them to be in terms of status. And
for folks that don't understand, when you sign with a label and you want to put a record on a label, what kinds of things do you have to give up, and what kinds of things do they do for you that you don't have to do yourself?
Well, for me right now with this record, I funded it again on my own. I got a little bit of help from Manitoba Film and Sound, and so, you know, I own all the masters and stuff. So
right. Good for you.
It's at that stage of things, in all likelihood, most labels you're going to end up working with, you're going to give up 50%.
Right.
And, you know, in doing that, you know, you want to work with a label that has webmasters and radio people and publicity. And so, you know, you're giving up 50% of the record's profits. But if you find a good deal, then I think it's well worth it.
Does a guy like you make a lot of money selling records anyway? Like you seem to be playing shows. It seems to be your livelihood.
Yeah, we do okay. The trick really is to be moving all the time.
Yeah,
you know. So I've kind of been back and forth. When we're out on the road, we do pretty well, and we've built a good following. But you have to keep going after it.
Right.
That's something I haven't been doing as much in the last few months. Since the summer really kind of died away, I haven't been pursuing the road so much. So,
and is that just because you need some time off, or?
There was a couple reasons. Yeah, I had like some personal reasons that kind of kept me home for a while.
Right.
And yeah, there was stuff here that I was trying to finish up on. And
but you're still able, you're one of those few guys around here that's able to make a living making music, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're not working a day job?
No, I've been getting away with it for about 3 years.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, there's sacrifices, but, you know, it's all part of the goal, I guess.
Right. But is doing shows still fun, or do you have to do it at times just to pay the bills?
I can't honestly say I've gotten to that point.
Yeah.
You know, I always vowed that I wouldn't let it get that far, and you know, the most consistent gig we've done has been at the Bella Vista there, and that's a weekly gig. And when I think about doing a weekly gig for 3 years, doing, you know, original music, you know, without going the cover route, it amazes me that we've gotten away with it. But even with the Bella Vista, you know, when there was moments where I thought, oh, you know, maybe this has gone on too long. And, you know, I always come back and change my mind, and it's not because of the money.
Of course, the Bella Vista is a great restaurant if you haven't been there on Maryland, and you're there every Wednesday night.
Every Wednesday night, yeah.
Still doing that. That's great.
And more importantly, it took me a while to realize that it's a great, it's a really great social outlet.
Oh, for sure.
I can't think of how many people have come there and told me that Wednesdays are their Saturdays.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's something definitely bigger than a band playing in the corner every week.
Yeah,
it's kind of grown into something else. And
yeah. And there's sort of a risk that you run in doing that every Wednesday. Does it hurt it when you go to do bigger shows like you're doing on Monday night with JP Ho? Is there less of a reason to come people to come and see you at the West End because they can see you for free every Wednesday?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I've been told that actually by a couple promoters in town, and you know, again, it's kind of it falls back to the ethic. Like what we do at the Bella Vista is very informal. It's for the most part, it's almost not even presented as a show. You know, We don't, you know, it's just real simple. And, you know, I'll do stuff there with musicians where I won't rehearse material when I bring it in.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll try stuff different ways, and the lineup's constantly changing, and it's very different than going to the West End and
Preparing
for a one show. And like in the case of this Monday show, I haven't played. The band I've been making my record with is Joanna Miller and Sky Onison and Damon Mitchell. I haven't actually played with the four of them in probably 6 months.
Really?
Give or take.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that alone will give people incentive to want to come out.
It makes it something a little bit special, something you don't see all the time.
It's different. And, you know, and I try and keep that true when we do the smaller gigs, too, where it's... you know, it's a really loose kind of environment. We have guests up. We have different musicians. And
At these bigger gigs, though, you must have sort of access to different people that don't come to the Bella Vista every Wednesday or might not see at times changed as well. So do you focus your presentation more on, you know, not that you're in not serious the other times, but being more serious and getting to the point and putting on a different show?
A room like the West End in general, there's something about that room that just kind of commands you.
Yeah.
You know, it's more formal somehow. I don't know if formal is the right word, but you know, it's very theater like. So yeah, I mean, every time I've played the West End, I tend to lean more towards songs that are a little more challenging and a little more dynamic, and there's more vocals because that the room is, you know, it's designed for that. I've always loved the West End to play a solo.
Yeah.
It's always been my favorite playing there alone.
You've done a lot of opening and stuff for people there.
Yeah.
And you sort of have that ability to play sort of different ways as well. You play with the band and do the rock and stuff, but you can also do the solo stuff. And does that sort of change the material, or do you do different material when you're playing by yourself?
Both, I guess, yeah. I'll change songs and there's a bunch of material that I've been recording and working on my own that I don't even do with the band. So,
oh, really?
At solo gigs, it kind of gives me the opportunity to pull that stuff out.
Right. Now, I mean, your band is, you're such good friends with the rest of your band. I mean, I'm sure that they have a lot of input into the music. How much sort of is it really a band, and how much is it of them working for you?
You know, it's kind of a fine line, I guess. I'd like to think that I've always went after certain people because of what I knew they had to bring already.
Yeah.
So in doing that, I don't go after these people to have them play specific parts I've written or, you know, so I...
Well, they're also good at what they do.
I keep it pretty loose. I mean, it wouldn't be worth pursuing and getting people like... Damon and Sky and Joe for me to tell them, look, this is what I want you to do. I mean, there's a pile of other musicians I could approach to go that route.
Yeah.
And, the songs are all written and arranged and often demoed.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to, like, on our new record, we recorded the entire record instrumentally, basically from start to finish, without using any vocals, any scratch vocals of any kind. We set up and played in a room the way we play when we perform.
Yeah.
And I hope that I made it a free enough environment for people to just kind of play what came out of them. So there's no rules in that sense. It's kind of like having a giant sketch and everybody gets to paint together, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not choosing the colors or
right. Now, this new record, for folks that have heard Postcards, what sort of sonically is different? Is there a different sound to it or a different focus?
Yeah. Well, you know, Postcards had a lot of musicians involved, and it was kind of, how do I put it? It was very collage-like in, yeah. in the approach to doing it. So this one is a group of four of us. We had played together for, you know, 2 years, 2.5 years,
right.
fairly consistently. And sonically, it's somehow it's more concise to me because of the fact that there's no guests coming in this time. Right. And like I said, we did the instrumental recording, which was kind of an unusual way to do it. I don't know if I've heard of anybody doing it that way, like a, you know, where it's the musicians don't even have the benefit of knowing where I'll be singing.
Yeah,
it creates this kind of just slight uneasiness where you know everybody has it kind of in the back of their mind that if something goes wrong on my corner,
yeah,
then we're done, we start again, kind of thing. And yeah. I think there's something interesting about playing on that kind of energy, and
yeah.
it really, you know, puts people in a certain kind of state, and
right.
I think the results were pretty pretty exciting. And we recorded it all on 2-inch tape,
right?
So that's something I wanted to do. Like a lot of the records I grew up really loving, you know, and it's just different than. You know, with a lot of records being produced and recorded digitally, I mean, people argue that they can't tell a difference, and yeah. they're convinced that there isn't a difference. But I'm absolutely convinced there is a difference.
Me too.
I mean, I love computers. I just bought one, and I'm learning to record at home. And I've been, you know, I dove in there a few months ago, and I love it. But it is definitely different. And it was really a goal to me to go the other route and do this. And there's a studio in town that caters to that, that has all this old equipment and a very laid back feel. And, you know, so
there wasn't so much pressure then to go in and get it done in a certain amount of hours. You just kind of,
it started off pretty fast. I mean, we got the music done really quick, and then just scheduling and different stuff kept coming up. And,
right.
But, and trying to finance it yourself is always a struggle.
For sure. You must be pretty happy with the results. Is it more or less finished?
Yeah, it's pretty close. Yeah.
So, Postcards, first of all, did you have many expectations with it? Did it meet or sort of beat your expectations with it? Did it...
Yeah, I'm not sure if I had huge expectations because it was the first time I'd done something like that on my own, and it's really a different feeling than having a band, you know, you got a band name and a band identity. It was really different. So I'm not really sure in the midst of all that, if I, you know, I think it met my expectations.
Yeah.
I'm just not really sure what kind of expectations I had when I think back to it. Like, it certainly got us out on the road a lot. And yeah, it traveled really pretty far for me. I mean, it's, you know, not in huge quantities, but it's all over the world. I mean, I correspond and email back and forth with a label based out of Holland, I think they're based out of. And, you know, so it's really, I put quite a few miles on it. And
right on.
I felt good about the introduction to the music I was writing. And I felt good about the way it came out.
Did you actually get to go over and play in Europe and stuff with this?
No, no. I've been actually working on that for this next record.
Oh.
But I've been using Postcards to kind of get a foot in the door.
So, but you're a smart enough, professional enough kind of a guy that you must have some sort of a game plan with this next one, or must have some sort of a goal. When you put out your first record, you just kind of do it because you can, and it's fun and whatever. But, I mean, this is your living, this is your livelihood, you want to make this your career. There has to be some sort of vision for this one, where it's going to go or what it's going to do for you.
That's why I've been taking my time with it. You know, ideally, I wanted to put out a record a year, and, you know, I feel like I write enough to do that. But, yeah, there's just so many other things to consider, and if you want to give each record, it's, you know what it deserves in terms of a push and effort and stuff. It's It's tricky to do. Yeah, I put a lot more time, and it's like I say, you know, shopping it around always sounds kind of silly to me. Yeah. But you know, now more than ever, there's, you know, in my opinion, the greatest labels in the world are these small companies that started really small and were able to find some level of success and are now operating on a worldwide kind of level. And
right.
That's where my sights are at. And, you know, that being said, though, I wouldn't be reluctant to work with somebody that was starting from that point, too.
Right.
I'm really not sure at this point which road I'm going to go.
Well, I hope it works out for you anyway.
Yeah.
We're talking a lot here, Scott. Do you want to play us a song?
Sure.
Or do you want to play something off the CD? Whatever you want to do.
I could play a song.
Please do. If you're just joining us, this is Scott Nolan. He's playing tomorrow night at the West End Cultural Center. Tickets are dirt cheap. What are they, like $10 or something?
I think they're $10.
Yeah. It's going to be a great show.
Be nice.
It'll be a fun show for sure.
Change my way of living, I'm more reasonable. And sometimes I wanna let go, and this weight's too much to pull. Well, there's a man on Main Street with a bullhorn and a borrowed cigarette, and a little place that we can meet and drink till we forget. We'll settle down. Sometimes I wanna light it up and bring a little trouble round. Sometimes even I forget that I've settled down. It is in luck, it is in money, it ain't about anything. That funny. I built this thing from the ground up, from end to end. And I'll be here singing my heart out with all my new friends till we settle down. Sometimes I wanna light it up, bring a little trouble round. Sometimes even I forget that I settle down. For pedaling, this engine's gone black, and I ain't starting over, all looking back. The song lives on after the singer's gone, and there ain't no place to stand. I'll tell you, baby, I don't mean maybe that I'm a lucky man as I settle down. Sometimes I wanna light it up, bring a little trouble round. Sometimes even I forget that I settled down. Sometimes I wanna light it up, bring bring a little trouble round. Sometimes even I forget that I settled down. Sometimes even I forget that I settled down.
Very nice work, Mr. Nolan. Don't tell me you're starting to grow up.
Well,
don't do this to me.
I wrote that about somebody else.
Oh, good. But as you've been writing songs for a number of years and you start to sort of grow up, does your writing change towards more sort of, I guess, grown-up topics and stuff?
Yeah, well, they're all grown-up topics, really.
Yeah, yeah.
What did I write that song about? Though it probably doesn't make a whole pile of sense, and it probably doesn't explain the song itself. My friend Curtis, that used to run the Blue Note Cafe,
yeah.
The song, believe it or not, came to me when he had showed up to a show of mine on this bike where he'd attached this thing to the back of the bike that looked like a little trailer, and the little trailer looked like a little beer cooler. When you flipped the lid of the beer cooler, it was this little electric motor.
Oh, really?
So he had rigged up his mountain bike so this little beer cooler on wheels looking thing pushed him around the city so he didn't have to pedal his bike anymore. And when I saw him pull up on that bike, the whole song came right from there. I'm not exactly sure why, but...
That's pretty funny.
That was the start of it.
When you're doing your first record, you sort of have the benefit of, you know, you'd been writing songs for a number of years and you could sort of pick the best from the number of years. But as you're putting together a second record, you probably don't have as much time or as many songs. Does that sort of put pressure on you to write better songs every time?
Well, that first record was, I'd only been writing a couple years. I left Lederhaus, which I contributed, and I wrote, a little bit in musically speaking, but wasn't the songwriter per se.
Right.
And then I was involved with Motel 75, where Dan Frechette was the songwriter. So that, between Matt from Lederhaus and Dan Frechette, that was kind of, it was like college to me.
Yeah.
You know, I was, in my opinion at least, was going, working between what I thought at the time was hands down two of the finest songwriters in the city.
Yeah.
And so I started writing, you know, just in between those two things. So by the time the first CD came out, I'd written a lot, but a lot for one record. You know,
yeah.
Like there was, you know, I think we recorded 20-something tracks and whittled it down to whatever it wound up being.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, didn't both those bands do reunion shows this year?
I don't think Motel has them this year.
I thought I heard something about that. Anyways, but you did the Lederhaus reunion thing.
Yeah, Lederhaus did one.
It had been a few years since you guys were together. How did it sort of feel to get back and do that again?
It felt really good. It felt really good in that none of us planned it. None of us talked about it. We hadn't even really been together or talked at all. And it was the Harvest Moon Society, which one of the guys that's kind of the founders of that society, you know, was close to all of us. And, you know, probably his first experiences in bars were probably because of Lederhaus.
Oh, yeah.
So we're all, you know, we're all kind of old friends with this guy. And he had this idea, and he really thought it would really help out the Harvest Moon Society if we would agree to do this. So I think that was kind of the clincher in that we weren't making any money and, you know, we hadn't planned it and someone came to us and thought it'd be like a special kind of event. And so I really felt good about how that came about and why, you know. In all likelihood, it wouldn't have happened.
Right.
Just if no other reason other than that, we're all really working hard on other things, you know.
Yeah.
There's just not a lot of time for that.
So was there sort of any unresolved, like, does this help you close the book on that? Because Lederhaus was a band that sort of, you busted up sort of right as things were getting pretty exciting, I thought anyways. Like people were, there was a bit of a buzz and everything, and then the band just kind of disappeared.
Yeah, when we got together with Uptown, the guy that interviewed us said, boy, we never thought this day would come.
Yeah.
And we all kind of laughed because, you know, there was no animosity. There was, it wasn't a bad breakup at all.
Oh, like, really?
We started off as a 5-piece band, and a lot of people that became real Lederhosen fans probably didn't even know that. That,
well, you used to be the Lederhosen 5,
yeah,
right?
Like, that's a couple of years we were the Lederhosen 5, and then when we became Lederhosen, it was like, that was a, it was a whole new band, you know, like it, everything about it was completely different. So, you know, when it's all tallied up, Lederhosen was a 10-year endeavor kind of thing.
And wow.
I just, I think it's one of those, you know, really rare kind of things where we were all really growing so steadily, being a part of this thing into these other areas, that when the time came that we moved on because, you know, everybody felt that itch to do it. Like, Christian had joined Scrooge McDuck. Our guitar player, Dustin, was pursuing photography, which he was, you know, he's incredible at. And, you know, Matt had a few things on the go. And so that was really the reason, is we were all kind of just seeing different futures.
Yeah.
And, but, yeah, there was nothing really negative about it.
Yeah. And you must have learned a lot from that experience, from being in that band and other bands, that that helps you with your career now, sort of things that you know not to do this time, or know you have to pursue this time.
One thing I learned from Lederhosen, and not to suggest that Lederhosen wasn't this type of band, but one thing I learned being a part of it is I needed to start a career in recording and producing music that I could reflect on, you know, down the road. And I personally grew kind of weary of nightclubs and that sort of environment, and that's where I started not really being able to see myself do it anymore. You know, the Power 97, New Year's Eves, and all those sorts of shows. It just, not that they weren't wonderful to do, and
that was a great show, by the way.
You know, you're always treated well, and once you're doing the bigger shows, you know, the promoters, you know, they bend over backwards to do things for you, but it, really, the connection, the thing between the crowd and it was just so different to me that it just I stopped feeling kind of passionate about it.
Right.
And you know, had Rick Fenton have not approached me in 2001 to play Winnipeg Folk Fest, I really think, you know, it's a good chance I wouldn't be doing music at all right now.
Really?
It's just, you know, it was, he kind of came to me right at a time where I didn't even really know that existed, you know?
Yeah.
I'd been to the Folk Fest on a few occasions and always had a great time, but I wasn't really aware that audience was there. And so, you know, the fact that he approached me the year that he did, I'll always look back on it as a really huge thing.
Really?
Because, you know, it wasn't a formal, I didn't send a package, and, you know, Rick came to me and said, I'd like you to do this, and I'd like you to do it on your own. I'd like people to discover you as a songwriter first, and, you know, maybe we'll do the band in the future. And, you know, it was just such an awesome thing for me.
Yeah.
That it really, it kind of, it put me back in the right place, and I realized that, okay, you know, this is what I want to do. And, you know, right after that, you know, every year since, festivals have grown, and we've been hitting lots more of them. And yeah, I realize that there is a place that I, you know, for what I'm doing.
So this music that you're doing now sort of has different applications, I guess. You can play the folk festivals, but you can also play bars. You can also play coffee houses or wherever you want, I guess, because you can just sort of perform it in different ways.
It's not such a strain that way, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going out and doing 2 months of rock clubs, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we could... You know, Joanna and I have played as a duo on a number of occasions. We've toured to the West Coast and back as a duo, just guitar, drums.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's really fun. And then instead of you being limited to certain areas for performance, you can kind of take what you do and, you know, like, you wind up in some crazy rock club and, you know, before you know it, it's like... It changes how we approach it.
Yeah.
Some nights it could be really low-key kind of acoustic scenario. And, you know, I've done gigs with Joanna where it's guitar and drums and we're louder than any band in town.
Yeah.
Like, we, you know, it's a heavy, like playing in Edmonton at the Night Galleries, I think it was, a few years ago, we were on tour with Nathan. And, like, that was my favorite show. We were playing to people that were into alternative rock and roll, you know. Yeah? And Joe and I didn't fit that scene.
Yeah.
I remember people kind of watching us as we came in, and, you know, it wound up being a great show because we were different.
Yeah. How are people in other places starting to know your name now? It's hard for us to tell in Winnipeg because you're from here, and you know, so many people seem to know you and like you here. But, you know, when you go to other places, do people starting to know who you are and starting to come to shows? Because
more so in the West.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always pleasantly surprised. It's, you know, it's nothing huge.
Yeah.
You know, but it's right where I need it to be comfortable and be happy. Right. You know, like, we were out in Vancouver this past year, and people were requesting songs, and, you know, oh, like, really? That's always that's a great thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's, in the East, we've done a little bit. I've been out there performing solo a little more, so. Right.
Now, are people starting to know you mostly based on festivals, or because you've just been there a few times, or is it?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Like, there's this little town in BC called Slocan.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're their band. You know, it's like, I don't know how it happened. We've played there twice now. And the last time we were there, it's like, you go into the grocery store and our record's playing.
Really?
If you go to the diner, our record's playing. It's really unbelievable. And you know, this is a town that's been in recession for quite some time. We come out there and the whole town comes out, and, you know, there's a real personal connection there. I get emails from a lot of these people on a fairly consistent basis, and so I don't really know how that happened exactly. I think part of it was from shows we had done in surrounding areas. Word kind of got around a little bit, and
but
you know, it's different everywhere. Like, this is a place that's not affected by radio. They're not really affected by television, you know.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes it's the festival, sometimes it's just that getting out and hammering it out and going to these places over and over. And sometimes it's friends, you know.
Yeah.
I've made fans because the perpetrators have taken our CD on the road.
Right.
Like, I've gotten a handful of emails from people that have discovered us simply because of the perpetrators, and, you know. Yeah. That's a wonderful thing, you know. It's nice to be somewhere and have someone come up and say, "Oh, I know of you guys because of this band." And
yeah,
certainly helps.
That's so with the new record, is it? Do you feel that you've captured what you do live? Because the live show is so vital to, I think, who you are, and not that it doesn't on postcards. I mean, I think it's fine on here as well.
Yeah, postcards, but isn't important. A live record though.
It's got to be important to you to capture what people get live, I would think.
Yeah, that's why we did it, setting up and recording the instrumental tracks live. And, you know, in the 2 or 2.5 years that I had Damon, Joe, and Sky with me at the Bella, a lot of people, you know, that was, like, of all the lineups over the years, that was the one the most people became attached to, you know.
Right.
And I specifically tried to go the route of capturing that band, you know.
Yeah.
the way people are used to them. I mean, the thing about it is it's never the same way twice. I've never felt that that band ever sounded the same two nights in a row.
Right.
But I think we captured that essence in there, you know, just by the simple fact that we didn't go in to do overdubs and isolate things, you know.
Yeah.
Where you got one guy in a room doing guitar and nobody else is there.
Yeah.
We really eliminated that, so. You know, I feel really good about it. It's got, I don't think it's such a huge jump from postcards, but it's grown. There's some different stuff. You know, we're kind of a core band, and it's, you know, there's a bit of organ and a little bit of overdub guitar, but it's, you know, Damon and Sky always brought a lot in terms of the sound. You know, they left a big impression when they were in those roles with the group. So
yeah.
I think the new record's caught that.
Right on. Do you feel like doing one or two more live songs, or do you want to play something off the CD? What do you want to do?
You know, I brought some more stuff in for you.
What do you got?
We could do both.
Sure.
I'd have to tune up real quick.
It's up to you.
Maybe we should rip something from the CD.
Sure, I can do that.
What do you?
Something off Postcards?
Yeah, you got something there?
Yeah, I can do that. Anything in particular? That's code for stall while I load it up.
Heart Goes On. I'm fond of.
All right, we can do that. There we go. Yeah, this is from Postcards, Scott Nolan and his band, and they're playing tomorrow night at the West End. Tickets are $10 in advance, and I think just 10 at the door. Here it is, something from Scott Nolan from Postcards.
My baby's love, I know I can't beat it. With all my heart and soul I treat her. That's just the way the heart goes on sometimes. She's got those eyes and she's so forgiving. I see a smile and feel like singing. That's just the way the heart goes on sometimes. Come on, roll 'em, Jay. I'm feeling lucky today. Yeah, maybe just for today. May fall, we won't fall lonely. For my love, there's one and only. That's just the way the heart goes on sometimes. This place we hide out under, out of the rain and the thunder. That's just the way the heart goes on sometimes. In my ear she whispers sweetly, I'm yours and yours completely. That's just the way the heart goes on sometimes. Come on, Rollin' J, I'm feeling lucky today. Yeah, maybe just for today. May fall.
Another real pretty tune. There's Scott Nolan from the album Postcards, and I think we've convinced Scott to play something live.
Well, we were talking about Slocan, so
yeah,
this song's on the new record. I wrote this for Slocan. Well, I wrote it in Slocan anyway. It's called Daytime Moon. Daytime moon, sleep so soon. Well, 18 wheels come crashing through. I hang my head, I dream of diesel. We're like a sunset, us prairie people. Alive and awake, I drift away under a blanket of clouds and the blues off the lake. There's nothing left here but silence now. We know what, we just don't know how. And I got your picture until I come back again. Sometimes two hearts, they beat stronger when they're farther apart under a dead time moon. You want holidays, don't take them so bad. You know she hardly ever means what she says. Just lift me up and fill me with sound. Well, try and try, you can't catch me now. Nobody loves this life the way that I do. Loneliness is an empty hotel room. Well, one night only and undercover. We'll fall like rain and dance like thunder. And I got your picture until I come back again. Sometimes two hearts, they beat stronger when they're farther apart in daytime moon. Daytime moon.
Very nice indeed, Mr. Nolan. Very nice.
Thank you.
Anything else we should talk about? What did we miss?
What did we miss?
Yeah, did we miss anything?
Oh, I just handed you another recording from a separate CD that I've been working on. That again, you know, I always talk about all these CDs I'm doing, and when they're coming out is another story. The CD's called Dog Years, and I've been working with a couple different people. I've been working with a guitar player from town named James Creasy.
Oh, yeah.
A super talented fella. And I've been working
with... That's old school. What's he been up to? I haven't seen him around
in
a long time.
He's been working with me.
Oh, really?
You know, he does different stuff. He's an interesting fella.
Yeah.
And so I've done a couple tracks with him and Lance, who I did postcards with. Actually, thinking about Lance, I've organized a show for December 3rd at the Pyramid. For those of you that don't know Lance McMaster, he would be responsible for my CD Postcards, the first Nathan CD, Moses May's most recent CD.
Yeah.
He had the space on McPhillips that was like a little recording workshop area.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you do know Lance, you know he's the kind of guy that he's a pretty rare person in any industry, particularly in music, in that you know, he put out a few records, like, you know, Nathan's got you know, great acclaim across the country, and you know, he's just never been one of those guys that's trying to climb anywhere. He's just, you know, he's really purely there for
he cares about the
for
music
the work and, while it's happening, you know. He's less concerned about what charts it's going to break, and more about, you know. And so he's always been very supportive and a great friend to a lot of us musicians. And his space was recently burglarized.
Oh, really?
And, you know, it's a long story. There was a discrepancy with his insurance company. And, you know, long story short, he lost everything.
Oh, man.
And the part that really was keeping me up at night was You know, months earlier, he was at one of my shows and his truck got broken into and someone stole all his tools. And, it's strange to me how, especially people that are really, really generous, really giving people that, aren't asking for anything in return for the most part. You know, it's like these often seem to be the people that get hit. So it was bothering me, and I was trying to think of, suddenly I looked at it like, well, now I have this opportunity to extend the kind of friendship that he's been extending to me all along.
Yeah.
And so I called up a few of the bands that he'd worked with, and people right away were like, sign us up. So Moses Mays agreed to headline the show.
Oh.
So we're doing a show on December 3rd at the Pyramid Cabaret, and it will be an incredible new Winnipeg band that I just went out and saw recently called Philbatross.
Oh, yeah.
Really excellent band. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they're kind of out of the ashes of Volume, maybe.
Okay.
Some of the Volume guys.
Yeah.
And my group will be there, and Moses Mays will be the headliner. And, we decided to throw this together like a party and keep a reasonable door charge, like maybe $10, and everything goes to Lance. We're going to try, and I'd like to see us, come up with half, of what he maybe lost. And I realize it's a strange thing to do a benefit for, and I know Lance was a little uncomfortable with the idea, but to me, I might not do it if it was just anybody. But when I think about the efforts and things that he's done for people and kind of the purity of where he comes from when he does it, I really believe that it warranted doing this. So.
Well, absolutely.
And when I started phoning people too, their reaction was so, anything we can do to help. And it occurred to me that this was the right thing to do. So,
well, I mean, you get that. You get some people that don't get it every time. I mean, people gave me a hard time about doing the times change things initially. Some people did, but it's just something you have to do. I mean, the Winnipeg music community is so strong, and
they need it.
You got to help each other out, because people like John Scholes and Lance McMaster just do so much for the rest of us.
And it's really a joy in the end. Like when you mentioned the times thing, like when you're standing in there and you look around, it's like, I remember talking to John that night and like how overwhelming that must have been for him. I don't think the West End saw an audience of that size. I can't remember in recent years.
Yeah,
like it was.
We sold out by 10 o'clock, I think it was, and then as people left, we put more people in. I think we ended up selling well over 400 tickets.
No, that's a lot
at $10, which was pretty impressive. So, anyways, people care, and that's a good thing.
It's good to see. I think it's important that the musicians get it too, not just the audiences.
Yeah.
So it feels good to be a part of something like that.
For sure. All right. Well, we're going to play this new track from Dog Years, and hopefully people will actually be able to buy it one of these days.
Yeah, one of these days. This was just me and Lance, and this one we had a friend of mine, Paul Bocaine, played sax. Lance engineered, and I did the rest.
Awesome. Well, what's it called?
It's called Everything to Everybody.
Right on. Let's hear it.
Cross that bridge, say I did, and I say I did. Sorry there, I couldn't just leave. This is between you and me. I was all lit up, and oh so proud. I built it up just to tear it back down. I'm a loss for words, you can't find me. Can't be everything to everybody all the time. Everything to everybody all the time. We've been down, played out. I know just what I'm talking about. Caught up, spun around. Your whole wide world turned upside down. All the time, everything to everybody, everything to everybody, all the time.
That's very cool indeed. That's new from Scott Nolan. I like that one a lot, Scott.
Thanks.
And will we likely hear that one tomorrow night, you think?
Yeah, pretty likely.
Well, here's a bunch of new stuff, I'm sure, a bunch of old stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You could show that's tomorrow night at the West End. All right, well, Scott, it's always a pleasure having you here.
And, thanks for having me down.
Anytime, you just drop on by, let us know what you're up to. And should we play one more off Postcards before we go?
Sure.
And he asks, knowing the answer. Girl from West Virginia?
Sure.
Good enough? All right, here it is, Scott Nolan from the album Postcards. And people can still pick this up, right? It's,
yeah.
Is it in stores and stuff?
Yeah, you can get it around town. The bookstores and yeah. All the cool indie record stores have it.
Or come on out tomorrow night.
Come on out tomorrow night.
Here it is.
Better get a guy in there. He's living in the fight.
Grown up girl raised in a grown up world. A mother and a child raised like a St. Joseph style. But her faith is gone. School and had begun, she was anything but fun. This bridge was burned long before this town was ever born. Her faith is gone. Take the good with the bad, laughing outside, feeling sad. The girl from West Virginia.
Girl from West Virginia.
She's the girl from West Virginia.
The girl from West Virginia.
Up to a priest, but her innocence was gone,
and nothing he could ever preach could ever bring it back again. Her faith was strong.
She'd never do unto us I had done unto me. She'd never do to anyone thing she's had done to her. But her faith was strong. With the bad, laughing outside, feeling sad. The girl from West Virginia.
Girl from West Virginia.
The girl from West Virginia.
Girl from West Virginia.
I'm gonna celebrate.
I'll see my mama twice a year when I need that on a grave. Well, her faith was strong. Said, I ain't got no job, I ain't got no pension plan. For there's a new arrival, my faith's in God's hand. My faith is strong.
Bad, laughing outside, feeling sad. The girl from West Virginia.
Girl from West Virginia.
She's the girl from West Virginia.
Girl from West Virginia.
Girl from West Virginia.
Girl from West Virginia.
She's the girl from West Virginia.
Girl from West Virginia.
Mr. Scott Nolan there. Catch him tomorrow night, West End Cultural Center, along with Gurf Morlock's double-barreled CD release party. $10 guaranteed to be one of the shows of the year. You don't want to miss that. And then after that, you head on down to the High and Lonesome Club, where I bet you might just bump into those guys again. It's going to be a lot of fun. Then, of course, Saturday night, Steve Forbert, West End Cultural Center. Another great show. And then again, after that, you head on down to the High and Lonesome Club, and I bet you know who you'll see there. Scott Nolan and Gurf Morlocks just might make an appearance that night as well. So no reason not to see them. Anyways, thanks for being here. I'll be back Sunday, 2 to 4 p.m. Tell the band to go home. We'll be back next Thursday, 6:30 to 8 o'clock. Check out the website, steelbeltedradio.com. Stay tuned.